Hey, today is Wednesday, June the 7th. This is the women's Chumash here. We're in the middle of Parshat Bahalotcha Bamidbar Perik Yud Gimel, Perik Yud Dalad. Okay, Rabotai. I'd like to dedicate this year in memory of Ruchi Shores, whose yard site is today. She was a powerhouse on behalf of Sharsheret, bringing to someone so many people's attention and help and consideration for people who have developed breast cancer. And she was a real unbelievable force in our community and worldwide in this regard. And hopefully our learning will be le'ilui nishmata. We are up to Bamidbar, chapter 14. What? Gracious, excuse me. Bereshit, Perek Yudal. At least you're listening. You are listening, okay.
2025.
Right. Bereshit, Perek Yudalit, Pasuk Yudchet. The Torah told us in Pasuk Yud Zayin, we'll read Yud Zayin again. Vayetze Melech Sdom Likrato. After the battle, Acharei Shuvo Mehakot et Kedol Omer Vetamalachim Asherito, the king of stone comes to greet Avram upon his return from striking Kedorla Omer and his gang of kings. Where did he greet them? El Emek Shaveh. In a place called Emek Shaveh. That's the simple pshat. According to the Midrash, which Rashi cited, all of the kings got together and agreed that Avram was going to be the Nasi of this particular community now. Who? Emek HaMelech. This is the Emek HaMelech. So we saw a couple of interpretations what that means. Now, the Torah, as we pointed out, interrupts what Melech Stone said to Avram upon his encounter. That is recorded in verse 21. But in between, you have Psukim, Yudchet, Yutet, and Chaf. So the Torah deliberately writes that Melech Stone comes to greet Avram, and deliberately does not tell us what happened, but we are interrupted with Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem. Then we go and resume the conversation, which, whatever the conversation was, from Melech Stone to Avram. We'll see why this is so, but that's what's happening. So the Torah, the editor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, puts in something else. Umalki Tzedek Melech Shalem Hotzi Lechem Vayayin. Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem, brought out on behalf of Avram and his military crew bread and wine. Vehu, and Malki Tzedek at that time was Kohen Le'el Elyon, was in the service of God. Whatever that means, we'll see. Hu Kohen Le'el Elyon. Vayivorchehu Vayomar. And this Malki Tzedek, who is Melech Shalem and some form of a Kohen, says, Baruch Avram Le'el Elyon Konei Shamayim Va'aretz. Blessed be Avram to the one above. I'm translating it literally and carefully. Baruch Avram Le'el Elyon Konei Shamayim Va'aretz. What is God? The El Elyon. He is that who owns everything in this world, Kone Shemayim Va'aretz. And then he turns Malki Tzedek, Melech Shalem, he turns his attention to God. Ubaruch El Elyon, Asher Migain Tzarecha Biyodecha, who has placed your enemy in your hands. In your hands, Avram. Vayitein lo ma'aser mikol. And Avram gave Malkitzedek, Melech Shalem, who is the Kohen Elayon, he gave him Maaser from everything that he had captured during the war. That's what these three psukim say. Any questions, any difficulties that you sense simply in the presentation of the text? Think of the phrase Baruch Avram Le'el Elyon. What should it really say? What do you think the phrase means? May Avram be blessed to the Lord? What does that mean? What should it have said? If you want to say that Avram is going to be blessed from God, May El Elyon. Because Malkitzedek probably understands that a bracha originates from God. So you would say, Baruch Avram, may Avram be blessed. Who ultimately can bless him? May El Elyon, the Lord above. But what does it mean, Baruch Avram Le'El Elyon? That's number one. What else seemingly is out of order in light of the fact that we know that this Malkitzedek blesses twice? What seems to be out of order? First you bless Avram and then you bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That doesn't seem appropriate. If you find reason to thank God for having defeated the enemy and placed the enemy in your hands, first thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then thank Avram for his courage and that he waged a war. Why would it be that way? So those are some of the issues that we will... Yes? Okay, it doesn't say. But typically it is the ordinary Jew who would give a Kohen Maaser Mikol. That's typically the way, that's the way, even though it doesn't say it at all. That is correct. It's initially talking about Malkitzedek, then suddenly flashes at the end of the pasuk to something that Avram did, reciprocating to Malkitzedek. So the first issue that troubles everybody is, who is this Malkitzedek?
And who's El Elyon, right?
El Elyon, we know who that is.
But maybe he's God.
Okay, so we're going to see, based on Malkitzedek, who he is, it's undoubtedly our God. So there's no trouble about that. But who is this Malkitzedek? So let's take a look at, as we always do, let's start with Rashi. Rashi doesn't even bother considering the pshat. Doesn't. As Ibn Ezra does. Ibn Ezra says, just read the text, don't look at a medrash, don't look at Rashi. Who is Malki? His name is Malki Tzedek, that's his name. And he's the king of Shalem. What Shalem is, we'll see. But his name is Malki Tzedek. Rashi ignores the simple pshat and goes right away to the midrash. Who is Malki Tzedek, says Rashi, Midrash Agadah, who Shem ben Noach. This is Shem, the son of Noach. And he was the king of, Rashi doesn't quote it here, but all other Parshanim do. What area is he the king of? Shalem. What do you think that is? Yerushalayim. He's the king of Jerusalem. The Ramban will totally disagree. He said that's not where Shem was awarded territory in this area. It's just a cute little medrash, but don't take it too seriously. But that's the way Rashi learns. Now, why would Shem... Okay, and he'd have to be living an awfully long time, Shem, but that's not... It's not 1,000 years like Og Melech HaBashan or something like that, but he's already getting to be a senior citizen. There's no doubt. What? That's from Noach to Avram. So, and so this is 9 generations. So a generation is approximately 20-30 years, you know, depending on. Okay, so he's 180, over 200 years old. Not terribly shocking, considering that Avram lived 175, Yitzchak lived 180. So it's not so terrible that somebody's in the 200s at all. It's not so terrible, despite the fact that at the end of Bereshit, God said that from here on in, none of those 900-year jobs any longer. It's going to be 120 years. That's what it says in the text. But apparently, there were a couple of exceptions to the rule. So, who's Shem ben Noach? And why did he furnish them with bread and wine? Lechem v'yayid, kach osim liyigiei milchama. That's what you do for the wary of those who are engaged in battle. V'herelo she'ein bilibo alav al shaharag et banav. And Malki Tzedek is demonstrating that what? He's not angry at whom? At Avram for having killed his children. Which child of his did he kill? Rashi doesn't tell us. So there are some Midrashim that try to figure out, looking at the list of children that Shem had, and then trying to identify one of the five kings, maybe it was him. Yes.
Is Avram also one of his children?
Yeah, according to Midrash, he studied in Shem's yeshiva.
Right.
The Shem of Aver. Right. But doesn't mean that he's a son. He is ultimately a descendant of his, there's no doubt. You have to be a descendant of either Shem, Ham, or Yafet. That's it. And he was a descendant of Shem, there's no doubt. Umidrash Agada, and now the Medrash says, Ramaz lo al haminachot val hanasachim shiakrivu sham banav. This is a hint that Avram's children will eventually offer minachot, flower offering korbanot, and nisachim, wine libations, in conjunction with the other korbanot. Why only these two things? Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute. That's the Medrash which Rashi cites. So, this is a widely quoted Midrash. Widely quoted Midrash. However, let's just take a look at others who don't necessarily. Take a look at page number one. And the bracket is where it's Ibn Ezra, in the middle of the page, right underneath the Mosaf Rashi. Malki Tzedek, says Ibn Ezra, Mikra Kain, he's called Malki Tzedek, Ba'avur Shehu Malach Al Makom Tzedek. We know that Yerushalayim has been described by various prophets, most famous of whom is Yeshayahu, in chapter 1 of Yeshayahu, which we read every single Shabbat before Tisha B'Av, Shabbat Chazon, because we read Shabbat Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz, and he says, Tzedek Yalin Ba Ve'ata Miratzchim. That previously, what was the quality that made Yerushalayim stand out? It was a city of righteousness, where they took up the case of those who were less fortunate and unable to defend themselves. Riv almana v'yatom. They would take up the cases of the widow, the orphan. And now, bemoans Yeshayahu as the Beit HaMikdash is about to be destroyed. What does he see in Yerushalayim? Instead of tzedek, it is what? It is ba'atam miratzchim. Now there are murderers running all over the joint. So, many parshanim, Ibn Ezra Birosham, believe that the reason why Yerushalayim is called one of its qualities is because it's called the Ir HaTzedek. Ir HaTzedek. And Malki is the king. Without identifying his name, he is the Melech of what? Of Yerushalayim. And then we repeat it in another way. Melech Shalem. Shalem is another name for Yerushalayim. Ramban and Ibn Ezra quote the same pasuk in Tehillim, Vayehi Shalem Sukko. His covering, or where God will rest his Shechinah, is in Shalem. That's Yerushalayim. So, yeah, it's everybody. Malki Tzedek, Malka Yerushalayim. Yes, it's well known. And there's very few disagreements about that. And in fact, that Tzedek happens to be the hallmark of Yerushalayim is something that is ingrained in our thinking even at the time of the Chumash. Please go for a minute, for 1 minute, to Dvarim chapter 1. Dvarim,
let me just check. Right,
what? Yeah, because he killed him.
For what?
He was one of the people who were fighting against him. He was one of the either one of the kings or one in the king's army who Avram just fought. So if you go to the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, you see what Moshe is starting off with. As you well know, the entire Sefer Dvarim, authored initially by Moshe Rabbeinu, not God, initially by Moshe, 37 days before he died, it is Moshe's farewell address. That is what Sefer Dvarim is all about. And then, after Moshe finished, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I loved this address, and I'm going to make it part of my Torah. Initially, there are only supposed to be 4 books inspired by God. Then Moshe, his farewell address, added to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. That's why the nickname of Sefer Dvarim is Mishneh Torah. Because initially it was Mishneh, oral tradition. Then it became part of Torah Shebiktav, part of the written law when God incorporated it. So what happens here is, that's Moshe Rabbeinu calling. What?
Last week he said 7 months.
That's correct. Yeah, that's true. Now, let's look at starting at Pasuk Vav. Hashem Elokeinu diber eleinu b'chorev leimor rav lachem shevet b'harazeh. God finally said, we're sitting too long at this mountain, Har Sinai. Let's get moving. Where to? Into Israel. Us'u lachem uvo har ha-mori. Very nice. Look at Pasuk Chet. Re'ei nasati lifnechem et haaretz. Bo'u reshu et haaretz. Come and capture the land. Very nice. Now, Moshe then continues and says, but you guys were complaining to no end. Complaining to no end. And then look at, skip to Pasuk Chaf. No, actually, Yutet. Vanisa mechorev. We traveled from Chorev. Vanelech kolamid baragadol anrara. And then he says, and then look at Chaf Bet. Vatikruvune laikulchem vatomru. Nishlecha anashim lefanenu v'yachperu lana ta'aretz. So what is the first event that Moshe is going to talk about? The miraglim. Because Moshe blames the Jewish people for not getting into Israel because of the Chet HaMiraglim. That's what Moshe himself said. Nothing to do with the waters of the Meribah by striking the rock. He says in Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Look at Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Gambi hit anaf Hashem biglalchem leimor. God got angry at me because of you. And he said, Gamata lo tovo sham. So we know why Moshe begins the narrative, the review of the narrative of Israel with what? With miraglim. Because Moshe is frustrated that he's not getting into Eretz Yisrael. And he points out, you guys are to blame. Very nice. But I skipped about 10 psukim. I skipped about 10 psukim. It should have gone straight from Pasuk from Pasuk Yud Aleph. It should have gone straight to Pasuk Chaf Bet or to Chaf Aleph. That would have been continuous. God said, let's move, and we did move. And then you started complaining. You want the Meraglim, and we know what happened with the Meraglim. But that's not the way Moshe presents it. What does he sandwich in between? The fact that God told us to move, and then we did move, and you requested Meraglim. Don't ask me where does it say that we request the Meraglim. It doesn't say that in Parshat Shlach and Sefer Bamidbar. Moshe has a totally different presentation than what appears in the original story when God says to Moshe, send the Meraglim. Shlach lecha anashim. It troubled all the Parshanim. How did Moshe change history? What actually happened? Did this happen or did that happen? But that's not my concern now. What does Moshe do in between? In between of those psukim that I skipped. Look at it and tell me the topic. Shoftim. Yes, shoftim. And what type of... He describes some of the jobs that a shofet has. In Pasuk Tetzayin, Ushpatetem Tzedek Bein Ish Ubein Achiv Ubein Gero. Lo Sakiru Panim Bamishpat. Don't play favorites. Kakaton kagadol tishmaun. Every big case, every little case, make sure that you give it equal attention. Lo sagurub ne'ish. Don't be afraid of anybody. Why does Moshe, he seems like he's like incoherent. Why does he interrupt the Meraglim story with this halacha of appointing judges? So the Rav once suggested, based on the fact that Moshe is implying that the underlying mitzvah for which God is now going to bring us into Eretz Yisrael is to do what? What's the single most important mitzvah which we are being brought to Israel for? Tzedek. Exactly. Tzedek. This is borne out at the beginning of Parshat Shoftim, the end of chapter 16 of Sefer Dvarim. Look at the end of chapter 16, the beginning of Parshat Shoftim. It is chapter 16, verse 18. Shoftim v'shotrim, chapter 16, verse 18, the beginning of Parshat Shoftim. Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol sharecha asher Hashem lecha netchen l'shvatecha v'shavtu etam mishpat tzedek lo satem mishpat. Same thing, lo sakir panim. And then tzedek, tzedek tirdov lema'an tichye v'yarashta ta'aretz. If you're not going to pursue justice, there's not going to be any conquest of the land. The most important theme. And that's what Yeshayahu repeats in his complaint against Bnei Yisrael. I just quoted it. Tzedek yalin ba. They used to be living, sleeping, residing in Israel, a spirit of tzedek, and now there's nothing but murders going around. That's the... He doesn't complain that they didn't wear Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, they didn't eat Rabbanut, they only ate Rabbanut, they didn't eat Mahadrin, they only ate Rabbanut. That's not what he's bashing them for. He's bashing them because there is a lack of tzedek, a lack of decency. And Moshe understands that it's one of the preconditions to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And hence, before he even gets to the story of why they didn't get in, what does he radiate for them at the beginning of Dvarim? What the ultimate objective is. Namely, tzedek u'mishpat, and that can only come about by having decent, honorable people serving as judges. So the city of Yerushalayim will ultimately earn its title as a city of Ir HaTzedek, Kiryah Ne'emana, the loyal, faithful city unto God, because it was the Ir HaTzedek. Again, Yeshayahu chapter 1. Yes?
Could it be that they had to fight so much to get to the land, and corresponding to what's happening today, that you lose your concept of tzedek if you're continuously fighting in a war.
It's a good point.
So that's why he had to.
That's why he had to continuously remind them. And that is why there is an ethics committee for Tzahal. That's why there is an ethics committee. And I've heard lectures by Rabbi Yuval Shurlo, who is a member of the ethics committee. He is the Rosh Yeshiva of one of the Hesde Yeshivot, Rabbi Shurlo. And he said how when the Tzahal is planning a mission, particularly during the Gaza War, they used to present every single case to this committee to see how they should operate. If you have to go and have house to house, when do you shoot? Do you shoot a bomb? Do you shoot a missile at a car, even though there might be some innocent civilians who are hurt along? You have to weigh it. And they actually weigh this every single time. Even though they know they can take out a terrorist very easily with this missile, but they consider the side effects. I wish the rest of the world would consider that as well. But they don't. But the Israeli army actually does. And it's difficult to maintain it. There's no doubt. No doubt. But therefore, Ibn Ezra says that it's called Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek. Now, Ibn Ezra happens to say, Vehu Kohen, it doesn't literally mean that he was a Kohen, even though almost everybody else translates it that way. That's not the pshat. What does Kohen mean? Exactly. To serve. Exactly. Like it says, V'chi hanuli, quotes lots of psukim. It means that you are working in the service of God. Doesn't necessarily mean that you are a Kohen. However, what substantiates the fact that for some reason, whoever this person is, conducted himself like a real Kohen, what substantiates that? The decision to give him the ma'aseh. Exactly. That's whereby him. If he wasn't a real Kohen, a real priest in that regard, then why would Avram necessarily give him ma'aser mikol? Why would he? It's not necessary. Or why would he be entitled to it? But if he's a Kohen, but Ibn Ezra doesn't necessarily believe it, and he says that, just follow Targum Unculus. So if you look at Targum Unculus in verse 18, it says, in the third line, Vehu Mishamesh Kadam El. Mishamesh means he served, but he's not necessarily a real technical Kohen, but everybody else believes that he is a real technical Kohen. And Rashi alludes to it in the Midrash by saying that he brought to them specifically wine and bread to symbolize two aspects of the korbanot, the korban mincha and the niske yayin. And the reason why he singles those out is because up until now, every single korban was pure animal. Every single time somebody brought a korban. So who was the first one to bring a korban? Who was accepted? Hevel. So he brought Son Umechel Vehen. Cain tried to bring from a Pri Adama and it was rejected. So nobody thus far offered a korban from grain or anything else that grows. This is a symbol that when Am Yisrael get into Eretz Yisrael, and indeed, the Niskeyayin are recorded separately, not as part of Sefer Vayikra. So open up to Bamidbar chapter 15 for a minute. Bamidbar Tetvav. So you have in Pasuk Tetvav, in Perak Tetvav rather, Daberu b'nei Yisrael v'amato aleihem ki tavo el eretz moshvoteichem asher nitachem va'asitem mishel Hashem ola uzavach lefalei neder b'neva o b'moadeichem. If you, when you come into Israel and you will fulfill your obligations, either it was a chag or you made a personal vow to bring a korban, now you have to add something to the korban. V'hikriv hamakriv korbano l'Hashem mincha solet isaron balul b'revit hein shomen v'yayin lanesech, and wine to be poured on the mizbeach. That is not recorded in Sefer Vayikra, even though these are part of korbanot, because it is used as a signal that even after the Chet HaMeraglim, when God said you're going to die in the desert, many people said we are never getting into Israel, never, because God will always find something wrong with us. So he records the mitzvah of niskeyayin and the mincha, which is a grain offering here, as if to guarantee that when you get into Israel, what's going to happen? You will have an opportunity to bring a korban. I'm guaranteed. And how do I show it? By teaching something that will begin specifically in Israel. It did not take place in the Midbar. There were no minachot and no niskeyayin in the desert. When they got into Israel, they observed it. And the Ramban elaborates and says it's recorded here to serve as a nechama, a guarantee that Am Yisrael will, after these 40 years, will enter into Israel, because there was a sense of yeush. So Rashi alludes to this, that here, whoever this Malki Tzedek is, and according to Rashi, it's shame, is now symbolizing that one day, when they get into Eretz Yisrael, they will have an opportunity to offer these korbanot, specifically the mincha and the nasachim, shiakrivu sham banav. The simple reason why lechem v'yayin is because that's what people ate and drank. Wine was the drink for everybody for the first couple of thousand years of Jewish history. Nobody ever drank water in the time of the Talmud, time of the Mishnah, time of Tanakh. Nobody drank water. Everybody drank wine. That's it. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Yes, it was. In fact, the Mishnah speaks of yayin lifnei hamazon, the wine which you drink before the meal starts; yayin shebetoch hamazon, the wine which you drink in the middle of the meal; v'yayin shela'achar hamazon, and the wine which you drink after the meal. That's why even little kids used to drink wine. That is correct. And the Mishnah tells us, it's a brisa, excuse me, which says in the name of the Chachamim that children are obligated in Arba Kosot on Pesach. Asks Rabbi Yehuda, V'chi ma to'elet yesh litinoket b'yayin? What purpose could there possibly be to have kids? Because they never had grape juice. Didn't exist. There was no such thing as grape juice in the time of the Mishnah, and they never heard of it. So you had to drink cups of wine. So Rabbi Huda asked the Chachamim, what purpose is it? And what did the Chachamim respond? What do you mean? They drink wine all the time. There was no water. There was no anything. They got used to drinking wine, even as little kids. So the Chachamim mandate, even a little child is obligated to drink Arba Kosot. So the simple reason is because that was the drink of everybody. You had bread, which is the main part of a meal, and wine was the primary drink, and you don't need the midrash. That's how Ibn Ezra approaches it. That would be typical to offer to people who were tired. The fact that Avram did not eat from anything that he captured leads Chazal to assume, why did he not eat or serve any of his people anything that he captured? Why? Because it wasn't kosher. That's what leads Chazal to say. That is his first occasion to eat from having gone into battle was this lechem v'yayin offered by Malki Tzedek Me'el Shalem. Up until now, he did not. And in fact, they quote a pasuk two psukim later. We'll just take a look at it for a second. Look at Pasuk Chavdalit. Chavdalit, Mr. Stone, the king of stone, will finally get to say what he wants to say to Avram. And he wants to offer him something. And Avram says, I'm not taking a nickel for you. Not a nickel from you. Nothing. Not even a shoelace. Exactly. Rak, Asher achlu hane'arim v'cheleko anashim eshalchu iti, oneru eshkolu mamre. Heim yikchu. I'm not taking anything for food, only for the food. For what? Some of the people who came along with it on there and Ashkel and Mamre were not Jewish. They were allowed to eat anything that they had, that Avram had spent money on, in order to what? To feed them, and it wasn't necessarily kosher. But Avram himself did not ask for any food expenses because he didn't take anything from Melech Stone in terms of food. He didn't. Why? Because he observed Kashrut. He observed Kol HaTorah Kula. Every Midrash refers to these Psukim in trying to establish that particular fact. Yeah. Now, take a look at the bottom. The Ramban says something startling on the bottom of page 1. The Ramban comments on the word Shalem, and he says, like everybody else, He Yerushalayim. Ke'inyan shene'emar, Vahi b'shalem suko. And he quotes another pasuk in Yehoshua, U'malka yikare gam b'imei Yehoshua Adonai Tzedek. Ki me'az yad'u hagoyim. Because even from that day and on, every Gentile knew, ki hamakom hahu mivchar hamikomot be'emtza ha'yishuv. Was the selected place in the middle of what? The entire Yishuv. Entire Israel, this is the selected place. O yad'u ma'alato b'kabbalah, or they knew about something special about Yerushalayim through true tradition, shehu mechuvan keneged beit hamikdash shel ma'alah, that the location of Yerushalayim is directly under the heavenly abode of Yerushalayim shel ma'alah. Shisham Shchinato Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is where the Spirit of God dwells. Shenikra Tzedek. God is often called, the source of all Tzedek. So, interesting that the Ramban is some kind of tradition that Gentiles were aware of a Yerushalayim Shalmala and a Yerushalayim Shalmata, and this information was widely circulated amongst all of the people. Very strange, but okay, that's what he says. Ubebereishis Rabba, in the Medrash it says, Hamakom hazeh matzdik et yoshvav. What do you think that phrase means? Matzdik et yoshvav. But it makes them righteous. Mm-hmm. Matzdik, it makes them justified. Righteous. When you live in a certain community, it has such an aura and an impact that it almost, against your will, forces you to conduct yourself in a certain fashion. So the Rabbi Ramban talking here like a Kabbalist instead of a rationalist. Umalki tzedek, Adoni tzedek. Nikrat Yerushalayim Tzedek. We know that Yerushalayim is called Tzedek. Shenema, that's the pasuk I quoted. Tzedek Yalin Ba. Tzedek Yalin Ba. So he has this idea that why does the Torah identify Yerushalayim as the Irat Tzedek? Because everybody already knew about it. It's nothing new, nothing hidden, nothing disguised. Everybody is aware of the unique quality of Yerushalayim, even at that time. Continues the Ramban, Vehu Kohen Le'el Elyon, Lehodia Ki Avraham Lohaya Noten Ma'aser LaKohen Le'Elohim Achirim. Avram would never give tithes to any priest who worshipped a foreign god. Avol mipnei sheyada bo, since Avram knew about this person, shehu kohen le'elyon, that he's ministering to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, natan lo hama'aser lichvod Hashem. He gave him the ma'aser in honor of God. Vaharemez la'Avraham mizeh, and Avraham understood the message by doing this, kisham yihyeh beit Elohim, that the house of God is going to be built here. Visham yotzi zaro hamaaser v'hatruma, there those children of his will produce the maaser and the truma. Visham yivarchu et Hashem, and there they will bless God. And shame, just bless God. All of Am Yisrael are going to bless God at this particular location. And Avraham decides to offer Malkit Tzedek, Trumot and Ma'asrot, due to the fact that that this is a foreshadowing of events to take place. That is correct. The name Yerushalayim never appears in the Torah. It appears in Tanakh, but never in Torah, never says the word Yerushalayim in the Torah. It always refers to it as Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. That's all it says throughout Sefer Devarim. Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place which God will select. Here is the only reference, Shalem, to Yerushalayim. And in fact, there is a medrash, I should have photostated, if you were at the communal tefillah on Yom Yerushalayim, I mentioned this. There is a medrash quoting HaKadosh Baruch Hu dialogue with the Malachi Asharet. Avraham did not call this place, the mountain, as Shalem. What did Avraham call Har HaMoriah upon which he offered Yitzchak as a korban? What did it? Hashem Yeira'eh. Right? Elohim, Yeira'eh, lo le'olabini. Yeira'eh. And he calls the Magma, Hashem HaKom, Hashem Yeira'eh. Shame called it Shalem. So the Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was stuck in a bind. Should he call it Yeira'eh or something of Yeru, the way Avram called it, or should he call it Shalem, the way Noah, Shem, the son of Noah. So what did he do in order to avoid it? He combined Yeira'eh with Shalem, and he wound up with Yerushalayim. That's what the Midrash says. But ultimately, what does the combination mean? It's supposed to teach us what our responsibilities are. Shame, what he did was help humanity survive in the Teva. Well, he fed all of those animals, all of animal kind, all of mankind. That's what Shame's claim to fame is. Avram teaches the world about the presence of God. So if you want to know what ultimately Yerushalayim is all about, it's the merger of accepting both responsibilities. One, your responsibility to God. One, your responsibility to fellow man. That's the message that Yerushalayim is supposed to propagate. Plus, the Rav added, that is the explanation of Ehu Kohen Le'el Elyon. When we go ahead and are motzi lechem v'yayin to people who have been involved in what? In war, what are you ultimately doing by conducting yourself in such a fashion? Because everybody is going to point out, why did the Torah interrupt Sodom coming and his dialogue with Avram? Because it wanted to show you the contrast between Shem and Melech Sodom. Melech Sodom comes to greet Avram, and what does he offer him? Nada. He doesn't bring any water, doesn't bring any wine, doesn't bring any bread. And Shem, who does not, he wasn't threatened in this battle, he recognizes right away that a war person who's been fighting is going to be starving and thirsty. You better provide something. But whenever a person acts appropriately, ultimately what happens to the name of God when you act appropriately? People recognize the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because they'll ask you, who is your God? And you'll tell them, my God is the El Elyon. So when Malki Tzedek offers service and offers Lechem V'yayin to Avram, what is happening? Le'El Elyon. What's happening to Le'El Elyon? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being what?
Praised.
Being praised. And that is the ultimate message and responsibility of each and every one of us. To conduct ourselves in such a fashion, as Chazal say, Shetehei Shem Shamayim Mit'ahev Al Yadecha. Maze Mit'ahev Al Yadecha? The name of God will be beloved by everybody through your actions. And God forbid, if you engage in inappropriate activity, then Shem Shamayim Mitchalel Al Yadecha. Then God's name is disgraced. So the Gemara gives an illustration about how far this goes. Amoraic sages were careful whenever they purchased something never to put it on credit. Never pay on the spot. Because if somebody will see them without taking something and without paying for it, what might they think? Oh, he's stealing, he's not paying. Or he thinks he's such a Rashke Bahag that he deserves to get it for nothing. That's, no. You pay on the spot. Of course he was not going to steal. Of course credit is, and we all remember our local grocer who used to write down in a pad by your name whenever your kids came in for a loaf of bread. You know, he'd write it, he knew that they didn't have any money. We all remember those people wherever we lived. So that's all fine and dandy for the lay people. Talmidei Chachamim never always supposed to pay because they always have to be concerned about Shem Shemayim Mit'ahev Al Yadam. And that's how the Rav interpreted V'hu Kohen Li'el Elyon. And that's the sequence why he blesses Avram before he blesses HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because in order to bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's the greatest blessing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates? To be proud of his people that he created. To be proud of. Because there's nothing else that we can really... What does it mean for a human being to bless the Holy One, blessed be He? What does it mean? I can't give him anything. My bracha is inconsequential. But if you act appropriately and the name of God is recognized and appreciated in this world, under those circumstances, you now have done something unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which He appreciates. Therefore, via blessing Avram for the way he conducted himself, that is indeed the ultimate blessing unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's not that he blessed Avram before blessing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By blessing Avram and praising his actions, that is the ultimate tribute unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah. Please turn to page number 3 for just a moment. On the bottom of the page. Now, this comment is made, I forgot by whom already, and it shifts to another story. The story is when Yitzchak is about to bless Yaakov. Now, as you well know, everybody knows, his mother, Rivka, told him to dress up and snatch the brachot from Esav. Now, what did Rivka tell him to prepare? A gedi izim, va'aseli matamim. Mazem matamim? Delicacies, spices, things like that, you know, for the prepare the meat. But it says in the text that Yitzchak drank before he blessed Yaakov. It says it in the text. Asks the Midrash, Mehechan hayelo yayin. Where did Yitzchak get the wine from? Hare matzanu shelo nitna lo imo yayin. Rivka didn't give Yaakov any wine. Ella vatitain et hamat amin. You're supposed to take the special delicacy, the way I prepared the meat, and serve it to Pop. Umi hevi lo yayin. Who brought him wine? Answers the Midrash. Michael hevi lo yayin. The angel Michael provided the wine for Yitzchak. Migan Eden. He brought it straight from Gan Eden. Omru Rabotenu, our rabbis have said, Ein at motze yayin shel bracha elozeh. We don't find any place in the text that wine was a trigger for a bracha other than this, the shel Avraham. And the wine that Malki Tzedek provides for Avraham. Shine emar, u'malki tzedek, melech shalem, hotzi lechem v'yayin, v'af zeh, kevon shishasa berichov. As soon as Avram drank the wine, what happens? He offers a bracha. So there are only two texts in the Chumash, at least. I'm not sure about Tanakh. Not sure how far he goes. Where wine is served as is used as a catalyst for providing a bracha. Here and in relationship to what? Yaakov and Esau. From this, Chazal tell us that all kos shel bracha have to be declared al hayayin. Think about it. Every life cycle event, birchot erusin, birchot nisuin are al hayayin. At a brit, al hayayin. Pidyon haben, al hayayin. In the time of the Mishnah, they also had Birchat Avelim. During Birchat HaMazon, at the end of Birchat HaMazon, they said Sheva Brachot. Just like you say for a Chatan and a Kala, but Sheva Brachot for an Avel. It's called Birchat Avelim. There's a whole discussion whether the Chatan can count as a minion, for the minion, or an Avel can count as a minion. And the Gemara splits. The Chatan can, because he's obligated to be Misameach, the Kala, but an Ovel can't count as the 10, because he's not obligated to do anything to the Menachamim. The Menachamim have to do something to him. So even for an Ovel, who we try to bless and say, we're not going to have any tsarot in the future, hopefully you only have smachot, it's done al hayayin. Birchat HaMazon, in general, is recited al hayayin. Not like we do it only when you have a minyan on a Shabbos or a Yontav or at a wedding. According to the Mishnah, you have to bring your peanut butter and jelly sandwich for lunch, and you're on a construction crew, you're supposed to have a little cup and glass of wine with you, and you take it out and you recite Rabotai Nevarech, when you put out, just yourself. Just say Hazanot Olam on. Because kosh shel bracha requires yayin, and it's lifted from this particular midrash, that there are two circumstances when wine precipitated bracha, and that's why our practice is that we always have kosh shel bracha is always recited al hayayin. Al hayayin. So take a look at page 4. And this is another citation of a Medrash. He cites, where I bracketed in Pasuk Yudchet, B'Yalkut. Yalkut is a collection of Midrashim, which Rashi quoted, Shiramaz lo al-haminachot v'al-unisachet. This is a remez for the Korban Mincha and the wine libations. Ulefi pshuto, but if you wanted to just act according to the pshat and ignore the Midrash, Yesh lomar, lefi she'Avraham ve'anashav heviu kol mine yayin u'ma'achal. They brought along their own wine and their own bread. Kidechsiv ve'et kol ochlom vayelechu. They had their own bread and then they left. Uksiv rak asher achlu hane arim. The people who were working, the some of the soldiers, they were provided or paid for by whom? By Melech Stone. Ela kevan de Avraham kiyem kol haTorah kula, v'lo ratza le'echol elehenot min hayayin mechashash shehem kila'ei hakeret. Why did he not want to drink any wine that might have been provided by anybody else? Because perhaps it was kila'ei hakeret. It's kila'ei hakeret is a certain mixture of you planted something together with a vine, any grain together with a vine, and in the attempt to produce something else, there is kila'ei zra'im, where you mix different types of seeds, and kila'ei hakeret. Kila'ei hakeret has a strict feature and a lenient feature. The strict feature is that the produce is asur bahana'a. Anything that grows out of this mixture of a vine and any other seed is prohibited to be. The leniency is that the prohibition applies only in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, kila'ei hakeret is mutter. Kila'ei zra'im, a mixture of other fruits, like, for example, a tangerine, right? Tangerine is a graft of two different fruits. You're not allowed to do that in Chutz La'aretz. If you were a payer, a farmer, you could not plant such a thing even in Chutz La'aretz. But the produce of kila'im, that is not kila'i hakerem of a vineyard, even though you're not allowed to do it, the produce is permissible. Therefore, even if a Jew did actually graft and create a new type of fruit or any other type of vegetable, whatever it is, we are permitted to eat it. Because the produce is not prohibited. It has a stringency that the Isur applies not only in Eretz Yisrael, but even in Chutz La'aretz. You're not allowed to do it. So if you would be a farmer, you could never plant and graft to make tangerines. But if you did so, the produce would be permissible. So Avram, who observes Kol HaTorah Kula, one of the things which the Torah tells us in Parshat Ki Teitzei is what's called Kila'ei HaKerem. That means maybe this wine was lifted from a field which had a seed planted together with it, and as a result, he would never ever drink the wine from anybody else. What other prohibition could he have given?
Because it was used to...
For wine libation, Yayin Nesef, exactly. That it may have been used to pour Lavoy de Zara, which you now have. So if you'd say that Avram observed the whole Torah, so then of course everything goes. Everything goes. Yeah, that would be, yeah. Yeah, 100%. That would be the problem for the bread, that it was baked pasakli.
Yeah,
that's true. Yes. All right, we'll stop here. We'll continue next about. You're welcome.